Welcome to Who Are You? A Babylon 5 Watchcast, hosted by two former strangers, now friends, who've gotten to know each other while watching their favorite show from their childhood, Babylon 5. I'm Ben.
And I'm Victor.
And today, we are reviewing Babylon 5, Season 5, Episode 17, Movements of Fire and Shadow.
Oh, wait,
but
wait,
before
wait,
we get... What
episode is this?
Movements of Fire and Shadow.
Oh, crap. I watched Movements of Ice and Earth. Damn it.
Oh crap.
let me get my other Pokemon deck out. So all right.
Now, Movements of Fire and Shadow is the last time I had food poisoning.
Oh, Taco Bell.
But before we get into our review, I've got a question here. Mm-hmm. Victor, What do you want?
Well, let's, as of today, I have 8 days left until I am completely done with my 22-year career in the Army. I'll be done. I'll be out. It's going to be amazing. I'm very looking forward to this, and it's just a new chapter in my life, and I'm super excited about it, just actually having freaking freedom again. Those who listened to Last Time On and Dominion Media Television fans, I mean, I don't like to talk about my personal life too much on there, but I joined when I was 19 I didn't have any better options, so I'm not one of those guys with the freaking, you know, USMC tattoo on my bicep or anything like that. I don't have any of that crap. I did it because I graduated high school directly into one of the worst recessions this country has had in a century. And I just didn't have any better options. And I was barely in shape. I barely passed the minimum requirements. And so I just kept doing it because I was good at it. And about halfway through, I was like, I really hate this, but I'm halfway through, so might as well finish it out. And I'm at some point this summer going to throw a huge party. Any listeners out there are in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I'll set a date. I'll probably put it on Dominion Media TV. I'm going to have a huge retirement party over at Cidercade. If you've ever been to Cidercade, it's awesome. You just pay like $5 to get in. They have a bar full of ciders. I really don't like ciders, but they make good cider. And it's a huge free arcade. All the arcade games are free. You just go up and press, but you're not putting a quarter or nothing. And they have excellent homemade pizza as well. So big pizza cider party. Celebrating my freedom. So yeah,
that's awesome.
That's what I want. And if so many people have told me that, like, oh man, you're gonna miss the Army life, dude, you're not gonna know what to do to yourself, I'm like, fuck you, I'm gonna do so much stuff, it's gonna be great. Like, I do not miss that job at all. I am happy with myself. I didn't define myself with my career. I'm my own person, and it's gonna be amazing. This is really exciting. Haven't been this excited since I was about to graduate high school.
Well, I'm so excited for you. Thanks. Let me know when it is. I'll kick your butt in Mortal Kombat.
Let's do it. Yeah.
I actually, quick story about me.
Yeah.
I once ruined a party in college because I was too good at Mortal Kombat. So somebody broke out a like retro gaming system. Yeah. I think it was a Genesis. Hey, I got Mortal Kombat 2. We're all going to play. Like, we'll do round robin. Everybody, you know, fights everybody while we're drinking. And like, I'm not even particularly like, I'm not like tournament grade, you know, Mortal Kombat or anything. Right. I just played enough that I knew all of Sub-Zero's combos.
You bastard. And so, you had everyone frozen constantly.
Well, and so we go around, I beat every single person in the party. They go around again, I beat everyone else again, and I'm just like, nice. Okay, I'm gonna pass this off. Like, this is clearly like, I can see we have stopped the flow, the progress of this party. Because like, three people are really hung up on, we're not moving on until someone beats Ben.
Nice.
How about I just pass this off to, you know, some of our other friends who don't actually give a crap can like, hey, we'll have fun, you know, newbie fighting each other. But like, these three guys were just like, no, Ben, you do not hand away that controller until somebody beats you. And also no throwing a fight because we'll tell. And I was like,
nice.
But clearly, like, we had other stuff we were going to do tonight. We were going to watch a movie. We were going to play some games. It was not going to be a Mortal Kombat party.
Mortal Kombat. Nice.
And so basically these three guys who got really hung up on it kept passing their controller back and forth. Well, I'm just looking around apologetically at everyone else. Like, I know this is not what you signed up for.
Nice. That's not to brag or anything, but that used to be me with Tekken Tag Tournament. I used to be extremely good at that game, and all my friends would I had throwing the controller across the room and shit.
Well, speaking of being trapped in a fight that nobody wants to be involved in.
Uh-huh.
We've got today's episode, Moments of Fire and Shadow. And man, there is a lot of, as much as we rag on this show for the quality of the CGI, there is a lot of it in this episode. There are a lot of space battles. There's a lot of stuff going on.
This episode was a lot more exciting than I remember. Like when I found out this was the episode we were doing, I didn't remember it at all. And then I started watching it and I was like, oh man. And if I may, we open in media space battle.
Yeah. Showdown. And it's the Centauri versus the Drazi. And the Drazi are getting wrecked, but they are given as good as they're getting. And
yeah. And I got to say, this one battle just makes me pine so much and makes me mad that no one ever made a Babylon 5 real-time strategy game. I used to love games like StarCraft and Command & Conquer and shit. And dude, this is just awesome. The Centauri, they got their plasma blasters. They got their mines, but I guess technically they're more like torpedoes the way they use them. I won't rant on that quite yet. But yeah, they and the Drazi have their missile swarm, and it's so fucking cool, man. It's like, I'm sure there's a mod out there.
The thing is, it's just I looked into this once.
Yeah.
There was almost a Babylon 5 real-time strategy space battle game.
Yeah.
Kind of like Star Trek Armada, which is one of my favorite real-time strategy games.
I loved it.
Armada 2, both great. So it would have been awesome. The one downside, like most of the races only have two on-screen ships. They've got big ship, little ship.
Yeah.
But hey, if I'm making the RTS, I can
you can make all kinds of deviations.
Add stuff in.
Yeah.
I can follow the same, design specifications and okay, here's the Centauri heavy cruiser and the destroyer.
Yeah.
And, the
Mimbari, you just tell the make an AI prompt that says, give me a blue space jellyfish. And it's a Mimbari ship. There we go.
But yeah, what happened was it was almost ready to go. And it's just one of those things like, but the game's done. And, me personally, just because I played so much Star Wars TIE Fighter, just give me a Star Fury game. How much fun would that be?
I had one a long time ago. It was a fan-made game. It was called, it had a couple different names. It was Babylon 5 Danger and Opportunity, I think it was what it was called. And it was a Star Fury simulator, basically. And it was hard as shit. damn, dude. They brought in the full Newtonian physics and everything. So if you wanted to, I remember crashing my fucking Star Fury into a planet or a space station all the time because they had real distances. So if you wanted to get to where you're going, you had to accelerate and somehow figure out what the halfway point is and then flip around and start decelerating. And and I crashed into so much shit because I couldn't figure out how to stop my fucking Star Fury.
That was one nice thing about TIE Fighter, you could just throttle down.
Those TIE Fighters run on space magic, so yeah.
we then get Lockley reporting about all of the space battles and how everybody's being attacked all at once.
We have a nice little cutaway scene to the combined human Narn security goons gearing up. I love that they still do that, man. The Narns are so badass, dude. I just love that they're still there working security for the station.
Yeah, that's a real cool piece of continuity. And we find out that on the station, Centauri are being attacked. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where it's just like, we find out later a bit more why Centauri might not be fully understanding what's going on. But after like the first or second murder, don't wander around by yourself, bro.
Veer was smart. He got a room at the motel, Babylon 5 Motel 6.
And we'll leave the light on for you.
So
with the weird sleeping pods, it's like, wouldn't a bunk bed just be easier, take up less space? I don't get it, but
I'm pretty sure I've seen what do they call them, tube hotels in Japan.
Yes. But the thing is, so Veer's apartment, when we get to it, has two of the little sleeping, you know, tube hotels.
Yeah.
But they're in the wall, which means that
that is not an efficient use of space.
Yeah, that wall now has to extend 6 feet, and then you can put the next, you know, the next apartment. And presumably they've got theirs sleeping, you know, in the wall next to you. But it's also like the rest of that wall, that extra six feet, is empty.
Yeah. Oh, man. Dang. I hope the walls are not thin, because I'm just in a tiny little tube, man.
Oh, no. Some Pachmara are getting it on.
Oh!
Show me your tentacles. Man, all right.
Can you imagine what a Pachmara snoring sounds like?
Oh, yep.
It probably vibrates the walls.
So Sheridan comes to visit Lockley, says that...
Yep, Sheridan booty call. What? Sorry. He just walks in and he says, Mr. President, it's 2 a.m. I was like, yep. Play the sleazy trombone music.
And he says that Garibaldi says that the Centauri are starting to attack jump gates. And they're like, but that destabilizes the whole system. We know.
Just some exposition from Lockley there, yeah.
And so that is now drawing the White Star Fleet in, which is one of those things where it suddenly again becomes super apparent. There's not a human government representative on Babylon 5. Yes, Sheridan is the president, but there still should be a human ambassador who fills the role of the other ambassadors.
That's a problem that I've had with this entire series. I don't know if I mentioned it before on the show, but it just does not make sense that the captain of the station is also the ambassador for Earth and all the freaking meetings. That's too much. That's stupid.
Too much stuff to do.
Yeah. If it was a little more realistic, I mean, I understand it just makes for more cohesive drama in the show, but
cutting out an extra character. Yeah.
Yeah. It would have made more sense. You have the captain of the station who takes care of all the fucking station duties, like traffic control and all that crap.
Hey,
and
you then you duties.
Have. Yeah. And then you'd have an ambassador from Earth, and that's their job, is just to be the ambassador. Because it doesn't make sense. The captain's in the meetings with all the other League and online worlds. He'd be bothered every 2 minutes with some kind of emergency down in Brown Sector or something kind of like that. So.
Yeah. You know, just if you've played Mass Effect, how you've got your main character.
Yeah.
And then there's also the ambassador guy. But this is Sheridan coming and telling Lockley, hey, surprise, gear up, because the White Stars are entering the fight, which means Babylon 5 neutrality is out the window.
Yeah.
And it's like, maybe this would have been a conversation she should have been involved in instead of letting her know after the fact. Hey, Earth got no vote in this. Surprise. Guns up. Bad guys inbound. So we finish up with Lockley, and then we go over to Sheridan and Delenn. They're having dinner together. We find out that Delenn does not approve of Sheridan's fashion choices for her. But we also have a conversation where Sheridan brings up that, hey, we've lost a bunch of White Stars in the battle with the Shadows. And then he says they lost a bunch during the Earth Civil War. And I don't remember them really losing any.
Yeah, one or two maybe, but yeah. And also I noticed that Delenn is enjoying her Minbari breakfast smoothie. And it's just massive. And they did the thing here that you mentioned during our last Stargate episode, where how Daniel Jackson had the never-ending stack of waffles. Well, here they actually had some empty plates. It was some little the empty Minbari smoothie. I fixate on stuff like this. I want to know what that was. It looks delicious. And they also had a triangle plate.
Which
Minbari's in your fucking triangles.
Your solution to everything is triangles. There are problems in life that can't be solved with triangles.
But Sheridan floats the idea of an Earth Minbari alliance where they start making new, bigger White Stars, but the Minbari have to ask for it first, which is, you know, weird. But she's like, yeah, sure, no problem.
She said that President Lutsenko won't agree to it unless Minbari agree to it. And it's just it reminds me of, you know, even when you're trying to go out to dinner with some friends and you're like, what do you want? I don't know, what do you want?
Or like if you ever had somebody who like kept dating like they were 17 way past the point of they should be, where it's like, all right, I want to go out with this girl, but she has to ask. Just... And it's like, why? You're interested. Like, go ask her out. It's like, she has to approach me and say, hey, how's it going?
The humans pass the Mimbari a note that says, you know, do you want to build ships? Check yes or no.
Yeah, so they want to build new White Star Destroyers. Mm-hmm. I'm sure this will never be important or come back later. At least I hope it doesn't.
Yeah, I put in my notes that this scene right here is the setup for Crusade. But,
what?
But yeah, I guess we'll just... Yeah.
We then cut over to, as we mentioned a minute ago, Veer's new apartment, where he's hiding out because Centauri everyone... keep getting attacked. Mm-hmm. He has a meeting with Leeta and Franklin.
Yeah, Leeta and Frankie.
And he's concerned because the Drazi... So Veer seems to know, hey, we're at war with everyone. Everyone hates us, which nobody else... on Centauri Prime later in the episode believes that they're actually at war. And it's like, well, then why does your ambassador keep telling everybody, hey, I know we're at war. I know the secretary of the minister of defense says we're not, and it's all lies and propaganda. But, you know, I know we're actually at war with everyone.
It's because Veer is the only Centauri of his entire species that doesn't have his head fully up his ass. That
is the which only would, one. It feels like it would be hard to do with the hair.
Yeah.
but he's saying, hey, they're not returning our dead. Like, they keep blowing up our ships, but never giving back our bodies. Mm-hmm. Hey, Franklin, hey, Leeta, can you guys go look into this?
Yeah.
And so, once again, for some reason... Hey, we need to send somebody behind enemy lines. Who are we sending?
Send the doctor. Fucking Dr. Franklin
and Leeta. Yeah. And it's just like, man, I mean, say you don't have any idea what to do with these characters.
Yeah. I mean, Leeta makes sense.
Leeta makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. But yeah, why send the doctor, man? It's like, oh, let's give him something to do. You know, it's like.
But it is fun. They do at least reference the fact that, yeah, we've done this before. We were both embedded on Mars. Like, we worked together.
They were.
But this time, Leeta, I do appreciate, she's just like, hey, sure, I'll go. Give me a fuck ton of money.
Hell yeah.
And they're like, and it's the sort of thing where it's like, okay, I understand they're going to have some quibbling over this in the script, but when she's like, hey, give me 500,000 credits, and Veer's like, I could maybe do 4. It's like, ain't your money. Just say sure.
Yeah, he's got the jet black Centauri MasterCard. You know.
Exactly.
He's the ambassador, so he can just expense it. And plus, you know, they're in the middle of 17 different wars right now, and I'm sure no one back on Centauri Prime is really keeping track of everything, you know, especially because of what we find out later.
But here we find out a thing that about Leeta that I find more offensive than her relationship with Byron, more offensive than going back to Psycor. She keeps her credit chip in her bra.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Oh,
yep, she reaches into her top and pulls it out and like, here's how you can send me the money. And it's just like, I've worked enough cash registers. Do not do that. It's gross. I've been handed enough, you know, hey, this has been stuck in my armpit credit cards or wet money. And it's just like, don't do that. It's the worst.
Oh my god. Oh man, I want to make so many gross jokes right now about what that credit chip is covered in, just sweaty and yeah
it's just not cool, man. From there we cut to Londo and Jakar in jail, which is fun.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly why they were thrown in jail at this point, I got to admit.
Jakar was thrown in jail because of the wars.
That's right.
And Londo's like, hey, where he goes, I go.
And thinking, then cut scene. Okay, I remember now. Yeah, that was great.
Nobody will put the prime minister in prison.
Very next scene, prime minister in prison.
Yeah.
Okay, I remember that now. Yeah.
You could write, and they did. Write a whole book of wonderful Jakar quotes. Well, it's the Book of Jakar. It accidentally made him a prophet. But the quote here, Jakar tells Londo, you picked a terrible moment in your social evolution to develop principles.
Yes. Oh, man. Andreas Katsoulis, just a genius, man.
It's the sort of thing where it's like, these two characters should hate each other forever. But Andreas and Peter are just so amazing together
yeah
that you can't just not have them together.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a, it's got to be out there on YouTube somewhere, just a super cut of all the scenes of Londo and Jakar, because that you can just watch that.
And so for like all of the problems I have with season five, Buddy, Londo and Jakar makes it worth it. Yeah. I love them. I love them together. I love them. Like, I like them as friends more than I like them as antagonists. It just makes me happy. And like, I know realistically these two guys should have nothing to do with each other, should hate each other forever, but they're too good together. So I love it. And so Londo's now talking about, okay, I have to start making moves against the Regent, because clearly the Regent is starting this war and nobody else knows about it. And then suddenly there is a flash and they're both knocked out.
Yeah, this was a pretty terrible special effect too. It was it was one of those where they just invert the color. It was really bad.
And so Londo gets taken out and gets operated on by some aliens who, I looked into them, they are only known as shadow servant surgeons.
Right, that's right. The shadow surgeons, yeah.
Yeah, we never find out anything more about them, unlike the Drak. They are just shadow servants. And this is where I have my biggest problem with the post-Shadow War story. I think I actually mentioned this in the Discord, which everybody should join, our Who Are You Discord. Having defeated the Shadows, I mean, by yelling at them and making them leave, not blowing them up, but hey, they're gone, so we won. The fact that the Drak and the other races that were allied with the Shadows are this big of a problem feels weird and disingenuous to me, because like, they didn't have their own ships in any of those space battles. They were all shadow ships, which are now gone. They were all client species. Like, they just did stuff for them. Like, I understand, okay, they've got a couple of really cool pieces of technology that, you know, can help them, but they feel like just as overpowered as the Shadows, if not more so, with the Keepers and all of that stuff. It's just like, man, if they could do all of this stuff, if they had, you know, mind control parasite aliens, why didn't the Shadows just win a long time ago?
Yeah, it is kind of difficult to wrap your head around. I mean, it's it really all ties into the whole Shadow Vorlon rivalry. Like, they had their own weird rules about what they could and couldn't do. I mean, I would have to headcanon it by saying that they were restricted by the Shadows.
They were being reined in or something.
Yeah, it's like they said, you're only allowed to do this. They only did what they were told, and the Shadows used them sparingly as part of their weird shadow ways. Like, they couldn't directly influence the younger races. They could only
The Shadows' whole idea was
cause chaos.
We cause chaos, so the strongest rise. And it's like,
you're right. That doesn't
why aren't the
Drak
the strongest?
Yeah.
Out there conquering people, because we're the strongest. I don't know. But I did appreciate, while they are working on Londo, he asks two questions. He wakes up, sees the shadow servants, and says, "Who are you, and what do you want?"
Oh, he does. Oh, I didn't catch that. All right.
Yeah. And they don't say shit, because their facial prosthetics do not move like that.
What exactly were they doing there anyway? Because they weren't putting the Keeper on him. He gets the Keeper later.
So. Yeah, I don't know what they were doing. I guess just testing him to see if he was Keeper susceptible.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. But he wakes back up in his cell, and Jakar's just like, "Hey, man, you passed out. I guess you had a good night's sleep." And Londo's like, "Man, how do I get out of here? I have stuff to do." And Jakar's like, "I know. I'm going to go back to my freshman days." And he just pukes everywhere. And apparently puke is so incredibly vile that the guard outside is just like, and lets Londo out. And everybody's just like, okay, Londo kept to his principles. No one can be like expected to stay around a puking Narn.
Very nice.
Then we cut to a conference room where Sheridan wants an update on the war. He's talking to the Narn, the Drazi, and the Brakiri, and they're all saying, "No, we don't need to work together. We're in this alone." And this is where, and I know Vic, I know you guys hate it when I go on one of my signature monarchist rants.
Oh, God, here we go.
But this is the problem with having a democracy here.
Yep.
Sheridan can't tell anybody what to do.
There you go.
They have no real power, no real authority. Oh, he can't be like, hey,
yep,
how about we all work together? Mm. Hey, how about we just do this? Because you guys are wasting resources, wasting each other's time.
Those are monarchist rant. God.
Yep. I'm just saying. Like, this would be a whole lot easier if it was King Sheridan.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're the king. Well, I didn't vote for you.
No, that's not how this works. Well, actually, it is. If we go with the Holy Roman Empire, they did elect their... They elected their emperor. But...
You and your Holy Roman Empire, Ben. Good God.
But they're having a problem because the Centauri are showing no grand strategy, no goals. You know, they're not, like, pushing towards specific targets or, hey, if we wedge in here, we can, you know, defeat this, you know, greater force. They just seem to just be attacking to attack.
Mm-hmm. This is how I used to play StarCraft. I would just annoy the piss out of my opponent until, you know, they quit.
Nuclear launch detected.
But we do get the point where the Drazi and the Brakiri and the Narn generals are just like, we don't care. We just want revenge.
See, and I love this scene because this is what I love in sci-fi. Like, if you're going to give me sci-fi, don't give me any humans, man. Like, I love that it was just a meeting between the Drazi, the Narn, and the Brakiri. Like, that's the kind of shit I love, dude. I don't want to see
give me some aliens doing aliens
talking. Yeah, even if they're just, you know, weird face prosthetics. Still,
yeah,
that's good enough for me.
But I do appreciate Sheridan apparently only has 5 minutes scheduled for this meeting about the war affecting the entire galaxy. And then he's like, well, I got other stuff to take care of. It's like, what's more important than this, Sheridan?
Yeah.
But he leaves and the Drazi and the Narn are like, you know, we said we weren't going to work together, but war crimes?
War crimes. Yay, war crimes. Woo!
Let's we can do some war crimes together. It's like, hey, strategic objectives, screw that. Let's blow up some civilians because it'll make us feel better. We do get then cutting over to CIC where we get my boy Corwin. Yeah. And they are noticing a Centauri destroyer flying through hyperspace and it's empty. Oh, no. And Lockley's like, hey, blow that thing up now. It did feel like, oh, man, they just barely got this thing.
Yeah.
And it made me wonder, like, we know ships can just be in hyperspace. It's just another, like, place of being. Why aren't there, like, turrets? That's they have to send the Star Furies after it, and they're chasing it and shooting and sometimes missing. And, you know, oh, hey, they managed to just blow it up just in time before the Centauri destroyer comes through the gate and blows it up.
Yeah, if this was Ben Sisko here, he would have had mines all over the place, right?
Well, you don't even need to have mines, just have like a couple of turrets.
Yeah.
Hey, you come to the point where the jump gate is, bap, 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 bap. Hey, we stopped you.
Which, speaking of which, Lockley mentioned this earlier in the episode, that she had half the Star Furies in hyperspace and half outside the station. Well, half plus half equals all. That's all your fucking Star Furies, man, dude. They can't be out there 24/7, which, you know, got me thinking, like, dude, they got to have, this really sucks, which means they got to have multiple pilots for each Star Fury because
they're hot bunking them. But then also, like, what do you do when there's maintenance? Like,
yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, have you ever worked a job where you had to share a desk with someone on a different shift?
Yep.
That's the worst. And now you're imagining like you're sharing a fighter cockpit with somebody else. They leave Cheeto dust in there.
It's just marinated.
Shit. Yeah. And they got their funk because they've been on like, you know, 12, 16 hour shifts. So they don't get a shower in between. Ah, God,
hopefully
that's
the
worst.
Hopefully you're not sharing jumpsuits and helmets.
Ooh, yeah, that'd be nasty.
Oh, no. I'm getting it here after Vic. I saw yesterday he had the fajitas. Oh, no.
Oh, man. Yeah.
You don't like the guy after you, so you just have nothing but sauerkraut. Sauerkraut cockpit.
Ooh, that's mean.
So then we cut over to the generals, and they are all agreeing, like, hey, let's totally do some war crimes. We don't care. Like, the Narn guy's like, yeah, not super worried about killing some Centauri civilians.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm pretty on board with that. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I understand. Like, I understand what happened to Narn. Yeah. I understand what they have historically done to people. it still feels bad being like, yeah, let's murder some civilians.
Well, there's a little bit of a deeper lore here about Centauri Prime. It's mentioned in the episode, I believe it's an Into the Fire, where Centauri Prime was going to be scheduled to be demolished by the Vorlons at the same time as Coriana 6.
Right.
And they mentioned that Coriana 6 had a bigger population. Centauri Prime said it only had a population of 3 billion, whereas Coriana 6 had a population of like 6 or 7 billion or something like that. 3 billion seems really low.
Really low.
Yeah.
For the seat of a space empire.
Yeah. Deep dive into the lore. I don't know if this was a fan theory or if it was mentioned in a book anywhere, but I remember reading on a message board about how because Centauri Prime is so monarchist, you know, your people, Ben.
Yeah.
And it's all the real estate on Centauri Prime is really expensive.
Because it's large estates and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so only the elite can afford to live there, is what it is. It's basically the whole fucking planet's gentrified. That's why you see so many Centauri living on Babylon 5, where it's more affordable or whatever.
Okay.
So that makes you feel a little bit better about these war crimes since they're targeting the 1%.
Yeah. Well, except who works at all those places? You know,
that's true.
The servants.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, that sucks. Yeah. It's like the Death Star, too. The Empire didn't have enough manpower, so they had to hire independent contractors and poor guys. Innocent.
I mean, they're contractors, though. If anybody deserves it. Sorry to all of our contractor listeners. I wasn't talking about you. Just everyone I've ever hired.
Yeah.
We then have Delenn and Lanier on a White Star, and it's going to take them another 48 hours to get to Minbar. And this is one of those, again, things where it's just like,
how
the times it takes to get places changes dramatically in Babylon 5 based on the needs of the episode.
You know, this is also a problem in Star Trek with their warp speed. It's like, how fast is warp? It's as fast as the plot needs it to be.
Yep.
But it's more forgivable in Babylon 5 because of hyperspace. Because who knows how fucking hyperspace works, man?
And I believe that's actually something that JMS has said was, hyperspace shifts around so that how long it takes to get somewhere is however long the plot needs it. And it's just like, hey, cool. Like,
yeah,
more power to you, man. Mm-hmm. You know, unlike Star Trek, where it's like, no, there are hard and fast rules, except when we want to ignore them.
Mushroom drive. Sorry. I'm not even going to get started on
how many
that,
times they accidentally end up at the edge of the galaxy.
Because
that happens to both the original Enterprise and the D. Then we have Franklin and Lita, at where we find out even hundreds of years in the future, men refuse to ask for directions.
He has a paper map.
A paper map that folds out and he can't figure out which way is north. And Lita is carrying all of the bags. Like, Franklin is the worst at this. He's carrying no bags, cannot navigate, won't ask for directions, like, I feel so bad for Lita here.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Londo, and he's talking to Minister Cellini. He is the Minister of Defense, and he says, hey, no orders have gone out to any of our Centauri ships. We're not at war. No one's died. No general has made any moves. This is all propaganda. And it's one of those things where it's like, I feel a little bit for Cellini. Everyone is telling me we're at war, that we've been blowing up ships, that we've been losing ships, that crazy stuff is going on. And it's like, I've called all of our admirals and generals, and they're all where they're supposed to be. All of our ships are still accounted for.
Yeah.
Like, we're not at war with anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, what the hell are you guys talking about? But this is where we get into the big twist of the war and this episode, where we find out that, you know, none of the actual normal Centauri Navy has been involved.
Mm-hmm. They're all being controlled by Shadow Eggs.
We find out in it in just a little bit that they are being completely manned from, you know, remotely. I've seen, like, videos and documentaries about, like, the people who build battleships and aircraft carriers. It takes a lot of people.
Yeah.
And a lot of resources. How have they built a whole second secret Centauri fleet that nobody knows about?
I'm going to say they didn't, and they just lied to the regent.
But if the defense minister firmly believes that all of my ships are still here, and we know that there are no Centauri on them, like, my assumption is what they're saying is they built a second Centauri armada and just didn't tell anybody.
Well, I'm just doing the, my mental gymnastics are that the defense minister and all his like accountants and everyone,
they're in on it.
They all got the drop keepers on them. Like they're being,
That's a possibility. I also think it could be a possibility that he firmly, like, truly believes this because he's like, I know all of our, like, ships. I know where they're at. Mm-hmm. None of them are at war. Yeah. It must be lies.
So I've got the episode playing up on my TV right now as we record, and it got to the scene where the shadow race servitors, whatever they're called, the shadow surgeons, abduct Londo, and it looks like they're giving him a dental cleaning.
Yeah, they're doing something with his face.
It's like they put a thing in his mouth and they bring the drill. Is what they are. They're dentists. He's in for his shadow insurance policy requires him to have his annual dental cleaning.
So Sheridan and Garibaldi find out that the Narn and the Drazi are attacking. For some reason, they didn't bring the Bracciri.
I was curious about that. I guess
Bracciri don't like war crimes, I guess.
Well, I'm going to say last time on, it's because they didn't get paid enough, because the Bracciri, it's kind of alluded to that they're a little Ferengi-like. They're very much run
Mercurial.
By, yeah, they're businesses. They have all sorts of corrupt business dealings everywhere. And they were all just like, there's no money in this for us. We're good. Yeah.
So then we cut back to Franklin and Lita. They are talking to a Drazi doctor, and the doctor is just like lying to them and being kind of shady. And two assassins drop over the balcony ready to shoot. And we have a brief little firefight where Franklin murders one of these guys. Mm-hmm. And then Lita, instead of, we've seen like, hey, she could easily have just used her psychic abilities and thrown this guy off the balcony and he's dead. She could have made him throw down his gun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She could have made their brain explode. What does she do?
She makes him shoot himself. And it is one of the like darkest like things I think I've seen on this show. And we've watched people burn alive.
Yeah.
We've watched a group of people have a plague and only Delenn walks out alive. Mm-hmm. Just watching this guy as he like, and then boom, blows his brains out.
Yeah, that extra earned that paycheck.
And then Lita does the thing that one of the things that annoys me the most in TV. She just jumps into this doctor's brain. It's just like, hey, not following any rules. I'm finding out your secrets. Why are you guys doing this? And she does the, I know why, and just runs out the door. And Franklin's just like, what? What's going on? Just tell me.
No time to explain. It's like there's plenty of time to explain. It's like a 20-minute
walk. We're
walking
several blocks. Yeah. And also, like, the guy, Drazi doctor isn't like, okay, well, she stole it from my brain, so Franklin, I can tell you. So we get Sheridan and a White Star. He's rushing off to help. We cut back to Delenn and Lanier. And this bit annoyed me. They're in hyperspace going to Minbar.
Right, yeah.
They run across four Centauri warships. Mm-hmm. And just immediately get murked. Like, immediately, the White Star gets shot up and destroyed. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is supposed to be the pinnacle of Minbari and Vorlon technology.
Right. It should be able to, at the very least, it should be able to outrun these freaking Centauri
ships. Or, take out three of them. Mm-hmm. The Centauri, like, I don't feel like the Centauri would be able to stand up to a normal Minbari ship.
Yeah, that is true.
Let alone a souped-up Minbari Vorlon ship.
I'm going to say, like, again, this is more mental gymnastics. I'm going to say that the shadow devices juiced up the Centauri systems, gave their It's like, you know, when you the shadow device is like got that golden legendary artifact ring about it. So you plug it in and it gives you plus 25% bonus to everything, you know. So.
But we see the souped up shadow Earth destroyers and the White Stars don't have any wrecked. Problems with those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so these are just these don't even have the weird tentacles.
Yeah. And come to think of it, we know that the Drazi have blown up some Centauri ships.
Yeah.
And the Drazi are. I'm sorry, the Drazi are idiots.
Yeah.
They're like slightly better than the Paclids, you know?
Yeah. And so it's like, okay, I understand you want to have what happens happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, it strained a little bit of credulity that they ran into these problems so quickly. There are things they could have done instead of just, hey, four ships. Oh no, what do we do? And it's like, you kick their butts. You're in a White Star. It's like, oh no, I'm in my F-35 and there's four biplanes in front of me. What do I do?
Right. Like,
I switch to missiles and blow them up before they see me.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if there is a better way to do this, because the White Stars really are just the best everything. Maybe the only
have
thing
them, like drop a mine or something where it's like, oh no, the Centauri must have mined this hyperspace lane.
Right.
We didn't see it until it was too late. Mm-hmm. We're adrift.
And maybe there's a... what would have been perfect is if one of the White Star crew members had a keeper on them. That would have been awesome and sabotaged it from the inside. That would... Yeah.
Or they blow up three of them. And one of them just rams the White Star.
Ah, yeah. Always love a good space ramming. That always
works. We find, you know, because now we know, there's not actually any Centauri on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, what do they care? Ramming. Nobody dies.
Ramming speed.
So, anyway, the Delenn and Lanier get blowed up. And once again, we see that if you are on the bridge of a White Star and you are not Lanier and Delenn...
Yeah.
You die instantly, which it feels like this has happened several times.
Mm-hmm. Is it just me or does the support beams on the bridge always come crashing down on everyone
absolutely.
On White Star? Yeah.
Yeah. Franklin and Lita find the shadow tech that the Drazi are looking for, and they are attacked and have a shootout that immediately ends and is never resolved.
Yeah, that did seem a little out of place.
Yeah, because we cut to them like we grabbed one of the shadow pods and are shooting. Mm-hmm. And the next time we see them, they're just on a phone call with Sheridan hiding in an alleyway. The Drazi doctor is gone. Maybe they human shielded him. We don't know.
I love that this episode predicted FaceTime, because Franklin is holding that exactly like you would hold a smartphone. And doing a FaceTime call with the White Star.
And then we get Londo talking to the regent, and this scene is fun because I love the regent. It annoys me a lot because the regent is like being like half obtuse, you know, and we know it's because he's got a keeper and he can only say so much. He's only allowed to.
Right.
Londo has had enough experience with dealing with Mr. Morden and the shadows. He should not be like this unable to parse out what the regent is saying. He's like, oh, they're telling me that I won't live to see tomorrow. And he's just like, who are they? What are you talking about? You live for many years. And it's like, man, you know this guy is being manipulated by somebody into having a war. You know, why are you so confused by this?
The actor credits for the actor who plays Milo Verini. This is his name, apparently. Cellini. But God, dude, he... On his IMDb page, that's his photograph, is him playing the regent. And he really hasn't been in a lot. Nothing since Babylon 5. Man, he's
great.
So good. Man, he played crazy really well. Like, it's that special type of crazy. And, you know, you almost feel, you feel for him, because it's not his fault that he's a villain in this story arc. It just happened to him.
He puts up with Cartaja and him being nuts, and he's just like, okay, well, at least Cartaja's gone. Like, I can be regent until the next guy becomes emperor, which for some reason takes a long time.
Right.
And next thing you know, you put a mind control parasite on me. Why? Like, ah, come on. So then we cut back to Sheridan. He's in a White Star. Franklin and Lita FaceTime him, as we mentioned. Mm-hmm. They say, hey, there's nobody on these Centauri ships. He's able to figure out, hey, that's why there are no bodies. That's why there is no strategy. The strategy is just to cause chaos and make everybody hate the Centauri. It's like, man, everyone pretty much already hated the
Centauri. Yeah, we were already there. It's not much effort is going to be required.
We see Lanier and Delenn in Girder City. They are broken and adrift, sent out a distress signal, but they're, who knows if anybody's going to find them. Denier has a broken leg and the ship is super broke. Everybody else on the bridge is dead. We see Jakar in his cell writing the Book of Jakar 2.
Jakar harder. Jakarter.
Jakar with a vengeance. Yeah. More the regent being half cryptic. Oh, I think I'll watch my demise from the window right here. And it's just like, what are you talking about, regent? It's like, man, like, he's talking about how he's going to die here at this window and not live to see tomorrow. Come on, Londo.
Londo's like, back away from the window.
Londo finds out that he has sent all of the ships away and deactivated the defense grid, which feels like this would need two-factor authentication or something. You need two people with two keys
right.
to turn off an entire planetary defense system.
Well, that's your monarchism right there. That's how it works, Ben.
But he's
that's
not.
How it works.
He's the monarch.
He's the regent. There's no emperor right now, so he just gets he gets it by default. This is what you want, Ben. You monarchist.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Okay. And we get a bit here where Londo realizes, oh no, we're in trouble. And I feel for Peter Jurassic here, because we have this slow-mo shot of Londo running down the hallway. It's very clear, like, all right, Peter, we've got 10 feet of hallway. We need you to run dramatically down it. You can't go too fast, because we need at least, 8 seconds of slow-mo running. So make it work, buddy. Because he's like, half jogging, like, no. And we get to Londo as he runs outside, looks up into the sky just to see the Narn and the Drazi warships open fire.
And that's our episode, or is there?
That is credits.
That is it. Yeah. And I don't want to get into the next episode too much, but I do remember having a discussion of this way back in the day, way back in the AOL dial-up internet days, that I can finally respond to properly 30 years later. So if any of you guys are out there from the old Babylon 5 message boards, let me tell you why you were wrong. They mentioned that this episode was really messed up because they thought, like, oh, well, then why did the Centauri bother with mash drivers if they can just park their ships in orbit and shoot? Here's why. In the aftermath of this, the attack on Centauri Prime had a few hundred thousand dead, whereas Narn homeworld was in the billions.
Yeah. Yes.
That's why. Much bigger boom. This was a smaller boom compared to the big boom that the Centauri did to the Narn. It's not, doesn't even compare. So, yes. Take that, Lita fan 69. Yeah, that's why. Ha, finally.
All right. Well, Vic, now there's just one last question we have to answer before we go on. How many Babylons are you going to give this on a scale of 1 to 5?
You know what? This one, I am going to give this one I'm going to give it a 5, man. Because it's a sleeper. I didn't remember this episode at all. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it. It's just packed. Like, from start to finish, it opens with a fucking space battle. It ends on cliffhanger, a good cliffhanger. Yeah. And, it just makes me really want to just see the next episode. It's great. Yeah,
this actually has, like, it moves the season plot along well. We get lots of character development. Mm-hmm. There's some stuff I really don't like, though. But
We get some great Londo and Jakar moments.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. And, we get Lita and Franklin doing their thing.
Yeah,
being super spies.
Hey, it's weird, but I also don't hate it.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this one a Babylon 4. You know, there's enough stuff in here that bothers me that I'm not going to, you know, give it the full 5. But this is better than your average episode of Babylon 5, and it's really good for a season 5 episode.
Very good for a season 5 episode, yeah.
So I had a lot of fun with this one, even if, you know, I did have my few quibbles.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for...
Time to make some predictions.
No, that's the other show. So next week, we will be back with season 5, episode 18, which is The Fall of Centauri Prime. Oh, I hear fall is lovely on Centauri Prime.
Damn it, that's going to be my exact joke. It's not the spring of Centauri Prime, not the winter of Centauri Prime. You know, that sounds like a George R. R. Martin novel. You know, the winter of Centauri Prime.
So on that episode, Londo discovers that the Drakh are really behind the war, planning to alienate the Centauri from the Alliance. He also learns his fate. Sheridan searches for Delenn's lost ship. So that is where we'll be next time. So before we go, I need to say some thank yous. Thank you to Jeremy Siegel for composing our lovely theme music. You can find more of Jeremy's work at jeremysiegel42.bandcamp.com and on streaming services as Nuclear Jaguar.
Nuclear Jaguar.
And thank you to Angry Duck Time Machine for creating our podcast artwork. You can find them on Instagram. Thank you to Aaron for editing this episode. Thank you to everyone in the Discord. You can join the conversation there by finding us on our socials. And thank you, listeners, for spending the last hour or so with us as Vic and I talk about Babylon 5. We appreciate you choosing to spend your time with us instead of playing disc golf or, you know, complaining about our families or whatever.
And we will see you next time on Who Are You?